I am an Uber geek to the extreme. To the point where this, I picked this up an hour before I got here, my new iPhone. And I haven't even had a chance to charge it yet, and it's killing me. Because if you just know me, you know I've been waiting for this. I've been waiting for the G3. I've been waiting for things to come out. And so I finally got it, and now I was focused on the presentation and getting everything ready for you guys. And so I've put it in my pocket. Notice it's out of the box and in my pocket, so it's close to me at this point, but it's there for sure. What I want to talk to you today about, if you don't know who I am, my name's Jeff Udick, and I've been teaching internationally for 7 years. And the one thing that I have come to understand is that international schools are way different. We are individual, we all have different needs, and there is no such thing as one size fits all. And I've talked to a lot of guys in America who say, oh, you just do it this way. I'm like, it doesn't work that way internationally. You don't understand international schools, you don't understand. And so I hope that I can bring that, if nothing else, to you today, that I feel like I have an understanding of kind of where we're at. I worked for 3 years in Saudi Arabia as IT director, 3 years up in Shanghai American School, and now I'm at the International School of Bangkok. I am more focused on the educational side, which I think also helps because everything that I do and everything that I'm going to talk about is going to be through the impact it's going to have on kids and where we need to go today. I've created a website for you that all of the research that I'm going to show you today and anything that we talk about, and if there's anything else you want to post, will be able to be found on this website. Let's see if I can screw this up. Right there. I don't know how well you can see that. I was trying to get the lights down out in front here. I tried those light switches back there. I couldn't get them. Was there light switches around? See, technology. It's lights, you know? I don't see any. Anyway, it's just Wiki. wiki.thethinkingstick.com. And if you go there, you can scroll down. You can scroll down here to the left. You'll see under 0809 conferences that I'll be presenting at. You'll see IRICOST, and then you'll see one called Business Managers. And you can click on that, and it will take you to all of the stuff. So right here is Business Managers at the top. You can click here, and you have your own personal page that talks about all the research and the ideas and a lot of the things I'm going to be talking about today. A lot of the things that I'm going to be focusing on are actually a chapter that I just finished writing for a book that's due out in June, which is the first time I've ever truly been published. I'm pretty excited about that. But a lot of it has to do with what is the technology plan for the 21st century and how do we move schools to get there. But in order to do that first, I want to kind of give you some background. So I'd like to start by showing you this video, and while the video's playing, I'll try to get the lights down. And I just want you to think about it, and then I'm going to have you discuss at your tables what this means. What do you think, or what does this video mean to you? Okay? Before we get to the video, I better remind you that I always like to say that we all have biases, and here are my biases. So I just want to get these out of the way so you know where I'm coming from. The role of schools today is to connect kids to information. Period. Okay? Our job is to connect kids to information so that they can learn. Information is moving too fast to have schools be anything else. You need to also understand, I put these in here just for you, there's no such thing as too much bandwidth, because we're going to ask for it, and there's no such thing as too much storage. And we're going to talk about what that means and how you can maybe get around some of the storage needs at your school. Okay? So here's a little background. See what you think of this. Okay, if we can come back together real quick. I'm going to ask to have one person at each table to kind of give us what was kind of the discussion at your table, what's something that you started with, and we're going to put you on the spot first because you're all pointing fingers. What's one thing that you talked about that you came away with watching that video?
Well, just the rapid development and what are we doing for teachers to help them prepare for and be able to really use that technology in the classroom and be able to discern original and creativity from just copying somebody else's ideas.
Excellent. Ms. Sable?
The student is believing what they see on the screen.
So seeing and believing, but they watch monitors. That is believing.
Okay. Good.
Also the difference between us, we're digital immigrants, where our students are natives. Mm-hmm. Because of this, our strategic planning of implementing technology in the school going to be very different than what the natives need and require.
So my question to you, are there any natives that are on your team when you're creating your technology plan?
No, they were not.
Back corner.
Ditto table 1-2 plus implementation has to be left from the top.
Excellent. Here in the middle.
Well, we only had a chance to discuss about what we do in DVS school, that news and IT program.
Okay.
So that was...
That's that?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Back here.
That was true for us also, and other than being a little suspicious of some of the data.
Hmm. Okay. Okay.
We don't believe everything we see on the screen.
Okay. And you shouldn't. You shouldn't. This table?
Too much information.
Too much information?
And what roles are our teachers and our administrators playing to help our students in deciphering those information?
Excellent.
Are we making use of the students to help those of us that are from a different generation?
Good. And this table?
We're just impressed about the exponential growth and everything, and then how do you keep up with it all?
Yep. Good. And if you are suspicious about the information, that wiki site that they give you, shifthappens.wikispaces.com, and you'll know that this is an old presentation. This is actually version 2. There's actually 6 versions, but this one I still think's the best. The music's the best. It's got the right climate, so I still use this one. And some of this information is old. And we're going to talk about, this was in 2006, and 2 years later, how much of this information has already changed. In just 2 years, and that whole exponential number, starting with, of course, my favorite new little tool. This thing revolutionized, in the last 2 years, the way we connect to the internet. The economy just went in a slump, and they still sold 4 million of these suckers. Why? It costs $700. Unless you're in the States, then it's $299. Of course, then AT&T gouges you behind the scenes for a 2-year contract, right? But how is this changing the way we compute when I can stand in the back of a room and check my email? When I could be standing right here and be connected to the 2,500 educators that I learn from on a daily basis? How about this one? Anybody seen the New York Times just went in bankruptcy?
No.
They're not making it. Last week, New York Ryan says, we're done. We can't do anything. They're up on the blocks. Everybody's wondering who's going to buy them. What happens if Google buys the New York Times? What happens if News Corp buys the New York Times and it's all owned by one news company? How's that going to change information? And at the same time, anybody know what this little device is called? Anybody got one of these?
Kindle.
My gosh. Oprah just endorsed the Kindle. Anybody watch that episode of Oprah? The whole episode, this was on my technology podcast, was the whole episode is about what did Oprah just do to the Kindle? Because anytime Oprah mentions anything, it goes through the roof. And everybody's wondering how much Amazon paid her to spend the whole episode on talking about the Kindle, where you can download the New York Times, the Boston Globe, the San Francisco Chronicle. You can take over 2,000 books with you anywhere you go, and it's this thin. Textbook of the future? Maybe. How about Google? In the thing, in 2006, in the video you just watched, 2.7 billion searches a month. In August, the data just came out for this last past August, 7.2 billion. 7.2 billion searches on Google. This sucker is taken off through the roof. 90 million active users. 90 million active users. Anybody here on Facebook? Be proud. Yes, that's what I like to see. I guarantee you, as international kids, they're here. If you're an international school and you're looking for a free way to connect your students, I talk about that in 4 of my other sessions this week, if you're interested. And of course, this one, YouTube. How bad is YouTube? YouTube, 2.7 billion searches in August 2008. That's where Google was 2 years ago. And here's the worst part. Here's the worst part about it. They just passed Yahoo for the number 2 spot. Number 1 site visited for searches is Google. Number 2 is YouTube, who's owned by Google. Anybody buying Google stock? Seeing that it just dropped about $200? Whew, they've the two number top search engines. What does it say about our students and what does it say about our society that we're searching more videos than we are any other news on any other site but Google? What does it say about the kind of learners our kids are when they're watching more videos than they are looking at websites? How does that change our classroom? How does that change learning? How does that change the work we should be expecting from our kids? How do you build a school that allows kids to do that? Anybody in a virtual world? Anybody in Second Life? Anybody hear of Second Life? By the way, this is a 10-year-old telling you this. Partial list of universities that are already holding classes. I couldn't even get them all on the screen. There's over 100 universities that are already in Second Life. What skills are our students going to leave our schools with? And we're not talking just little schools. We're talking Yale, Harvard, MIT. When your kids have to go to college, and they better know how to A, create an avatar, B, get inside a virtual world, and C, how to interact. It's tied to the US dollar. Second Life had its first millionaire in late 2007. It was a maid at a hotel in San Francisco who made clothes for digital people. You bought Linden dollars, and in 2007, they all of a sudden tied it as a real currency, tied it to the US dollars. You can go in and watch and trade Linden dollars, fake money in a virtual world. And this maid became a millionaire. Sorry?
I'll say this is what got Enron in trouble, right?
Yes, this is what got Enron in trouble. Exactly. That's good. But it's interesting, you know, where's this all going? I talked about this with some people at lunch. This is iTunes University. And the reason why I'm giving you this background is if you're looking for something to go to your school boards with, here are some reasons why we need to be doing this in our schools. When you go to iTunes University, there are over 120 universities that are freely giving away lectures via iTunes that you can download to your iPod and you can listen to. And we're talking, you know, little things like Stanford, you know, and little ones like, where's the M's? Down here, MIT, you know, Vanderbilt, Yale, giving away free lectures. What does this mean to a kid who's sitting in IB psychology class when I have to listen to this teacher over here go, wah, 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 or I can go listen from some psychologist at Yale who has written and published probably the book I'm reading, give the same lecture? What happens when the information's free? What does that do to our schools? What does that do to our teachers? Cuts on costs. I like that. iTunes and Apple just launched the K-12 university. This is only since August they launched. So now K-12 schools can create your own channel and give away your own podcast. So this is only about 2 months old. So you can see there's a couple schools that have signed up already that are giving away their content. Teachers are doing exactly what I'm doing up here, recording my voice. At the end of the day, they hand their iPod to some kid in class and say, "Will you go put this up there for me?" You don't need to know how to do it all. You're not going to be able to know how to do it all. "Can you go put this on the server for me and please hook it into iTunes?" And kids, they've got kids, they're doing all of it. Kids are the ones creating the school online. The fastest growing users of computers and the internet are 2 to 5 year olds. It's no longer the 12 to 21 year olds, they're already there. The fastest growing is 2 to 5. Who do you think the second fastest growing is? 45 to 60. Right? That's not interesting? But what does this mean? And this is where I'm at right now. I'm the elementary person at Bangkok. What does this mean for my new kindergartner that I have to go down and try to teach technology to when they've been using this stuff since they were 2 years old? And one of the first times it ever hit me was my goddaughter. I take a picture of my goddaughter when she's like 2, can barely walk, and she runs over to grab the camera to see her own picture. Like, I never would have. I mean, and she's not going to grow up knowing anything different. she's always going to have instant access to her picture as soon as it's taken. Our kids will never know a time without the iPhone. Our kids will never know a time without Skype. Amanda DiCardi, who's the IT person, had her five-year-old start up the computer and Skype her this morning when she was in the shower upstairs in the hotel room. Because, Mommy, yesterday I made this ghost as a Halloween picture. The kid's five. She'll never pay. This baffles me. Getting down to some hardcore stuff now. The Horizon Project is, this is a really good document, and it's on the wiki, the website that you can go to. It's created by the New Media Consortium, and they go around and they get some of the smartest people, futurists in the world, and they've been doing this since 2004, where they try to predict specifically for education what's coming down the pipe. So I put this in here for you because as business managers, you're looking towards the future. What do I need to be looking for? Where do we need to be going? And this was just released this August. They've been pretty good since 2004. They haven't nailed it 100%, but they've pretty much been able to kind of see what is going to happen and what's going to have the effect on education. So in 2008, the 2008 one came out. In 1 year or less, grassroots videos are going to take over our schools. Okay? They already are in some instances. Does anybody in here, does their school have a YouTube account? That you are producing YouTube videos as a school. What's that going to cost your school? Zero. Okay? Shanghai American School has one. ISB has one. Okay? We have kids creating content and putting it on the web. My favorite story was one at SAS when I was teaching middle school. I had an ESL kid and we were creating, part of the thing was the history of computers, and the kids had to take either a person, a product, or a company and tell the history of that person, place, or company. I had an ESL kid who decided to do Windows, Microsoft. And he does the whole history of Microsoft, and it was so empowering for him because he was ESL, he stumbled over words. So he was able to go back and delete and record, until he got it sounding exactly the way he wanted. He then went and found pictures that told his story and put together a story that had pictures with him telling the story of Microsoft, ending at the release of Vista. And we got so lucky, we uploaded the video the same day Vista was released on YouTube. We came back to class the next day. The kid had 1,200 people had already seen his video, and he had 4 stars. Do you know what 4 stars means to an eighth grader? And do you know what it did to this kid who's ESL, who's quiet, who never talks, and the rest of the kids in the class are going, why did everybody watch his video? And so we had this great discussion on why. What happened? Oh, it just so happened. That's the exact same day Windows launched Vista. And what were people looking for on YouTube? Free. Creating content for the world to see. Empowering kids with the tools that they want. My wife is an elementary school counselor, went into her fourth grade class and said, we wanted to make a video on collaboration. And then she said, when we're done, we're going to put it on YouTube. The kids gave up every lunch period. One kid went out and wrote the song, wasn't asked to, wrote the music and the song, and went into the music teacher at lunchtime to have her help him put a beat to it, and has the background music for the entire video. The other kids got into small groups of 3 and 4 and got to interact and act out what did cooperation look like. And she spliced it all together and put it on YouTube. It's been seen 600 times. Not a lot, but for a fourth grader, 600 times, and seeing that 599 of them are probably those kids, that's still pretty cool. It's out there. And it was so interesting talking to my wife. She said, we talked about making the video, but as soon as you're talking their language, they understand it. We created a podcast when I was at SAS that we hooked up through iTunes, and kids got to download on their iPod. And I had a principal who said, I don't know why you're doing this. Until one day he's standing out by the bus, and a kid's got one in and one out. You know how kids do. And he hears the podcast coming out of the other earbud as the kid's getting on the bus. He comes in and says, now I know why. The kids are listening to it. They like this stuff. They're hearing about what's the news in their school. Okay, grassroots videos, they say 1 year out, you're going to need. Are you going to be able to put content on iTunes? What's it cost to put content on iTunes? Zero. What does it cost to put content on YouTube? Zero. Okay? Ustream is live streaming television onto the internet. If the bandwidth would support it, I would have it set up right here. There'd be a video camera looking at me. It'd be going live out to the internet. I did it last year at the admins conference. I had 20 people sitting in the room, 60 people watching me live on the internet. Recorded for anybody to see. You can go back last year because I had an internet connection that was fast. You could watch every presentation I did at the admin conference last year. Recorded out there for everybody to be. What's that going to do to our schools? What's that going to do to, say, your sporting events, when you can live stream your sporting event from your campus with all you need is a video camera and an internet connection? And all of a sudden, those parents at whatever other school can watch live their kid, right? Because we all travel. We're not like back in the States where you go across the town, you go across three countries to play a sport, right? Again, YouTube. 1 year or less, collaborative web. A Ning is basically like a Facebook that you can create for yourself, free, ad-free for education. Take all the ads off it, make it yourself. You can create your own social network at your school for free. I'm going to show you another program that you can do that you can have total control over. What about collaborative web? What about Gmail? Gmail allows you, as a school, to sign up and you can get Gmail, Google Docs, which is Word, Excel, and PowerPoint on the web. You can get Google Calendar on the web, sharing collaborative calendars. You can get a Page Creator, which is basically on websites, and you get a chat for free for educational use. 6 gigabytes of storage. You cannot afford 6 gigabytes of storage for each one of your kids. Google will give it to you for free. All you have to do is go ask for it. I asked for it at SAS. It took me half a day and a phone call because they had a hard time verifying our address in China, so it's actually stored at my mother's house. Little does she know. Shanghai American School is at Green Acres, Washington. But this stuff's free. There's so much we could be doing that I think we can reduce our costs on this actual stuff and put our costs into my two biases, bandwidth and storage. Bandwidth being the most important. You got to have the connectivity. Got to find a way to have the connectivity. Okay? And the other one's Facebook. You know, our kids are already on Facebook. They're already there. Is your alumni site on Facebook? Kuala Lumpur has their alumni site on Facebook. ISB has their alumni site on Facebook. You go in, you create a group that's called the International School of Whatever Alumni. You have the kids, well, find the group. You don't even have to tell them. They'll find the group. They come together. They create it. Here's the step that I think. Of course, everybody's saying, well, how do you manage it? How do you make sure that there are things out there that aren't written? Counsel and say, this is your responsibility. You are the student council of this school. Your job is to make sure that we have a good professional-looking alumni association. You run it. You make sure the content is what it's supposed to be. You already have a student council that's part of their job anyway. Give it to them. You don't need to know anything about Facebook, except know that that's where the kids are, and it's free. KL has over 2,000 alumni members on Facebook. That's where they plan their gatherings. You know? The reunion of 1992 has been all planned on Facebook. For free. School didn't do anything except create the group. 2 to 3 years out, here's what you need to be looking at. Mobile broadband. Mobile broadband is going to be it. We all know it. It's going to constantly get faster. It's constantly going to change. But it's going to be mobile. Is there anybody in here that's not at least thinking about going to a wireless campus or a wireless school? Has anybody at least got wireless somehow in place? Okay, good. That's really good. Okay, I would not at this point be putting any more money into wired ports in classrooms. At this point, go wireless. That's the future. That's what people are going to expect. Internationally, you're going to have every kid carrying one of these in 2 years. As the price drops, if it's not an iPhone, it'll be some other phone that'll have internet access. Okay? It'll be wireless. Text messaging, it's got to be mobile. You got to put it out there. 2 to 3 years out, data mashup. How do we take data and we start putting it in different ways, right? I love this video. Who is the kid that finds the time to go through all of the old Sesame Street cartoons and gets the mouth to almost match up with the music. This person's taken all the old Sesame Street reels, taken their favorite rap song, and mashed them together to create something completely obnoxious. How much time did that take that kid? By the way, who's 16 and bored at home of doing his homework and the paper and pencil. So he does this. I'll never look at Bert and Ernie the same way again. Right? How about using something like Google Earth? Right? What about using something like Google Earth? This is the campus of Google Earth where you can go in Google Earth and you can look at different data. You know, I did something similar just the other day. We're starting an Explorer unit in fifth grade. And I'll just come up here because I thought this was interesting. So in fifth grade, we're starting an Explorer unit. We had all the kids go into Google Earth, which is free. Don't have to pay for it. Free download. We went into Google Earth, and the kids had to mark where they were born and all the places they have lived. On average, international kids have lived anywhere between 3 and 5 places. So we created this map of all the fifth graders and where they lived. And it's quite interesting to look from a student's point of view that in Japan, we've got 2 kids that were born there and 2 other kids that lived there at some point in their life. What if you could do this for your whole school? In knowing where your kids were born, we usually already have some kind of data like that on an application form somewhere. This is just one way that we can start mashing up and pushing and pulling data to give us new information the way we want. Okay? And the kids are going to look at this. This is called My Exploration. As an international student, that's your social studies unit right there. My Exploration. I am an explorer. We don't think of ourselves as explorers. How many countries have you been to? You've explored. You're an explorer. Doing the same type of thing with our kids. Okay? Google Earth, free program. Okay? 4 to 5 years out, collective intelligence. This is all the farther they ever go is 5 years, because after 5 years, it falls way off that we don't have a clue what's going to happen. And you should never have a technology plan farther out than 3. Collective intelligence, wiki books. Here's the textbook of the future. It's created by the student. Free. You click on English, there's already over 20,000 textbooks in wiki books. You go in, you click on psychology, you start reading to psychology. Here's where the teacher comes in and why teachers are still important. You get to a point where the information's not correct as a teacher. You get to a point where the information is missing. What do you have the kids do? Create the information. Your kids help create the textbook. Your kids help make sure the textbook is up to date. You're not buying the textbook, you're making the textbook. Right? Wikipedia is the other example. We hate Wikipedia because... Why do we hate Wikipedia? Anybody hate Wikipedia? It's horrible, horrible source. Made by millions of people around the world and more accurate than anything we've ever created as human beings. It's not perfect, but neither is the textbook you're giving the kid that's 5 years old and still has Pluto as a planet. You know, they did 3 years ago, they took Britannica Encyclopedia, compared it to Wikipedia. They both had 3 major errors and 5 minor errors. The only difference was the day after the report came out, Wikipedia fixed them. Britannica fixed them 1.5 years later when the new CD was released. That's the difference. Are we using Wikipedia? Are we having kids create the false information that's in Wikipedia? How many of you do you know that your school has a profile in Wikipedia? Both schools I've worked at has a profile in Wikipedia. And once in a while, a kid gets in there and they screw it up. The kids are constantly screwing it up. You know, some kid gets upset at the school or whatever. Heck, they went into the Shanghai one and said we had a $90 million endowment. Dennis Larkin came to me and said, I want to see the money. You know? So here's this thing, right? We can't control it. We can't go out there and we can't delete the page. But what we can do is let's empower our kids. Let's go to our student council and say, part of your job is to keep the school's image clean on the internet. What if we put kids in control of it? What if we had kids, the ones that were watching the web pages, making sure it was accurate, coming and talking to you as a business manager and saying, exactly what is our endowment? Is that information we want out there? Maybe that's not the information we want out there. Maybe the kid doesn't understand why we don't want that information out there. Think of that learning opportunity. 4 to 5 years out, social operating systems. Facebook merges with LinkedIn. Facebook is the online society. LinkedIn is a place where you create a profile and you connect with other professionals around the world. These two kind of combine. This was a home suite office. Telecommute good for business, employment, and the planet. He talks about how to get out of the financial crunch is by having your employees telecommute. And he looks at U.S. businesses, and he looks at how much a typical U.S. business spends on a business, the rent for the office space. And he's figured out that you can give your employees a broadband access at their house and cut your cost in half. And people aren't traveling to work. You've just saved the planet. You know? Or what if you do an office share? What if two companies share this office space? My company comes in and uses this office space to do that face-to-face collaboration part that's still very important. We have it 3 days a week. Your office has it 3 days a week. The rest of the time, we all commute from home in these social networks using Skype video conference, working from home. How do we prepare a kid when they might never have to leave their bedroom to go to work? What kind of skills do they need to have? What's the communication skill that they need? What's the social skills they need? How many of you, that's you right now? Okay? Stop for questions right now. Yes, question.
If all this stuff was really free, our IT budgets would be increasing. If you're talking about free this, free that, all of us, the finance people, are thinking, how are we going to pay for this? So my question is, what are we doing less of that should be costing us less in order to spend more on IT? I mean, I can't argue with the educators. I mean, I can talk about how we're going to increase tuition or where the money's going to come from, but
right.
I can't argue the value of it. I don't have a real basis for doing that. But there must be something that there's less of in education where we should be saving some money that can be devoted to IT.
Mm-hmm.
And as an educator and not a finance person, clearly, what is that?
I think you should be saving money on textbooks, which is probably a large cost for your school. I think you should be saving technology. I think you should be saving money on software. The software that it would take to run a school nowadays, I think you can cut if you know what's out there, you can run Microsoft Office for free. We're thinking of doing it at ISB. It's a conversation we've started. I don't know if it'll happen. But when you can have Microsoft Office, which is a huge budget line at everybody's school, what if you can have it for free?
And how do you have it for
free? OpenOffice.org.
You have to be willing to leave office.
You have to be willing to leave office.
Just like McCain.
Just sorry? Just like McCain, yes. Ouch. Okay. I think that's where you start to save. I think you start looking at what is now free, open source, on the web, that you can save money on. And just a second, I'm going to show you, I'm going to go into now kind of how do you start planning for this, for your sake, after this kind of educational background part. You know, how do you start planning from this as a business manager side? And I'm going to show you kind of the educational portal we're creating at ISB that is still very much a work in process. But it's all done through open source and it's cost us very little money. I'm not going to say no money, but it's cost us very little money. Okay, another question. Yeah.
You know, we just don't have the infrastructure that we need to make things fast enough for the kids and the teachers to understand it. And it's psychologically a big knockback.
When
we tried open office, we had a lot of problems with compatibility. That's all the teachers kept coming back with. They can't, you know, the formatting changes, this changes. It's some of that psychological is playing. Right?
Mm. Yeah. The bandwidth issue. I love Cambodia, and I know you have issues. Who's the, are you in Phnom Penh? Who's your technology? Jenya, little girl, a girl? Yeah, I love her. She sees me every technology conference, and she always brings two computers with her. One that she takes with her, she always sees me every conference, and the other one that sits up in her room and downloads everything they need to take back to Cambodia, because the you know, all the software updates, all the free apps that she wants. So she has one, she brings two computers. One she sets up in her hotel room, plugs into the free internet, and just, and she literally shows me the list. Is there anything I need to download that I missed? I love her. I mean, and I have so much respect for places like Cambodia that you are battling an uphill battle. You're trying to prepare kids for the 21st century that a country that's not even close to giving you the infrastructure to even be there. The only solution I would have in that case is looking at satellite. It's expensive, but the technology is there that you can have a very good satellite connection. That might be your only way out of Cambodia. Okay?
Integration. So many people, so many departments, all doing different things. How do you integrate?
Yeah. How do you
maintain consistency?
And maintain consistency. It's making wise choices and not trying to overextend yourself. And I'm going to show you the portal that we're creating that is a single user logon. One, our students can log on with one username password that gets pulled from PowerSchool. It's the same username password that they have for their whole system. And they can log into Moodle. They can log into, we run our own Facebook for kids. They can log into, teachers can log into their own website program. And we have our own wiki and podcasting server with one username password. Except for the wiki and podcasting server, which comes off of a Mac and off of an Apple server, everything else is free that we created for the kids. I'll show you kind of what that looks like. And I'll give you the name of the guy that's done the little bit of programming for us, who's based out of Thailand, who does fabulous work and is very reasonably priced for what he does. Okay? Any other questions before we kind of move on? Question?
How do you get the teachers who aren't the 21-year-olds to get to the place where they need to be to enlighten the students and facilitate learning for the students in this kind of world? Costing us a lot of money.
You hire me to come to your school. No, I'm just joking. I have my blog is called The Thinking Stick, and I actually have a bat that I take with me when I see those teachers. And I just club, no. It's tough, and it's a lot of professional development. It's a lot of professional development, and I truly, truly believe it starts with administration. If you have an administration that's focused on it, if you have administration say, this is the school we are going to be, you force people to change or you force people to leave. And there is no reason why internet, and I've talked to a lot of educators in Australia, in America, in Canada, and all over Europe, there is no reason why international schools should not be leading the change. We have the money, we're private, we do not have a national curriculum like the UK, we do not have financial issues other than our kids leaving us. We don't have to do No Child Left Behind. There is no reason why schools shouldn't be looking to us saying, wow, they're the ones that are going to lead the charge. I really, truly believe, and that's why I love being international, that we should be those schools.
Just on that, I think...
Sorry,
I'll get you next.
Right.
And so I think that you look at, you're talking about what are the costs, but what are the cost savings also, and how do we improve the quality of our faculty and those that want to come and work with us?
Yeah. And I've had, because we're getting into recruiting season right now, I've had quite a few educators already, international educators, who have come to me and said, where's the schools I need to be looking to? Where's the school that's going to allow me to do this? Who are the schools that are thinking to go one-to-one? Who are the schools that understand that I'm not going to teach out of this textbook because this science textbook is 5 years old. And we know the rate of scientific information by 2010 will double every 72 hours. I have teachers asking me that, and I think you're absolutely right. That when you go out recruiting, you put out there. I'd love to see a sign that says, we are a one-to-one school and we're looking for one-to-one teachers. You're going to attract teachers that want that. you're going to attract the kind of teachers you want. Okay? Question.
Parents want a business office to tell them to justify the major of the learning result with those investments.
Mm-hmm.
Have a kind of a guideline or measurement or matches to tell them what is worth to invest.
There is some data that's starting to come out from some of the schools that early adopted. Maine, the state of Maine, has some great, I don't know if anybody knows the state of Maine. Last year, actually, Governor Keene was here last year and talked about some of the data that's coming out that they gave every middle schooler a laptop. The governor came out and said, every middle schooler is going to get a laptop, period. We're just going to do it. I understand this is where it has to go. If you need to read a book or you want to read a book, The World is Flat by Thomas Friedman. If you haven't read it, it's a fantastic book. Most of the information you saw out of that very first video came out of The World is Flat, came out of his research into what's happening here. Other than that, we don't see a lot. And the problem is we're still testing new skills in old ways. And I had this conversation, we had this conversation the other day, is a lot of teachers, okay, let me see. Okay, go easy. Yeah. I like the IB. I don't like teachers that hide behind the IB for a reason not to change. Did I say that okay?
Yep.
Okay. I have a lot of teachers who I've talked with, and they're like, you know, Jeff, this is all fantastic, and I love it, but, you know, I teach IB, and I just can't do it. Well, if there's any curriculum out there that leads to this, it's the IB curriculum and paper and pencil. And it's interesting because we just had our Dennis Harder, who will be presenting here as well on Curriculum 2.0, which is a fabulous presentation that if you're looking for something to go to, I highly recommend. But he's our high school guy, and he's been working a lot with our foreign language department in the IB now, because IB has come out and has just now said that they will only take the IB verbal exam for foreign language as an MP3 file. And so he's working with the foreign language, not to try and get our forged language learning out on iTunes. They can't, they don't see that. They just want to know, how do I record the kid's voice so I can turn it into the IB exam? But if the kids need to be creating an MP3 file, why aren't we creating them all school year? And why aren't we teaching the rest of the world how to learn Chinese? How to learn Spanish, how to learn French, how to learn whatever it is. By the time it comes to just do their little oral reading into a microphone, it's not going to be a last minute thing of trying to teach the kid how to do it. They're going to be doing it all year. And iTunes is trying to find out a model to monetize it all for you. What if all of a sudden, let's say 3 years down the road, think, have a little vision here, 3-5 years down the road, you can charge 99 cents a download for that particular file on iTunes. All of a sudden it's not free. You've got great content. Your school's creating great content. You can now charge for it. There's a revenue stream for you. All right, bandwidth. Bandwidth is key. Get all the bandwidth you can. That's where I truly think your money should be spent, is on getting bandwidth, creating that connection. That, I think, is first and foremost. You cannot connect, communicate, and collaborate if you have no bandwidth. There's no such thing as too much bandwidth. The one thing in the movie that I really like, and we were talking about it a little bit earlier, about fiber optic. If you can afford fiber optic, it is a great investment. Because fiber optic at this point, the laser beam is just being changed by changing the switches on the end. You calibrate them a little bit differently, you get 3 times the speed. You don't have to rewire the school. We just change, at the end, we change a little switch that reads the light differently. If you can have fiber optic in there, it's a great investment for your school. As much fiber optic throughout the school as you can. Shanghai Community International School, are they here? I thought I saw somebody from Shanghai Community International School. What they've done is they've ran fiber optic right into the ceiling and then dropped from there, they're just the regular intranet cables into classrooms. So all the farther you're doing just the regular plug-in, you know, Ethernet, is from the wall to a black box that sits right there, and then they're fiber optic. When it comes time to upgrade, they change the black box. That's it. Done. Upgrade the whole school. They're good for at least 8 to 10 years, I would guess, before they will have to rewire again. Servers. They're still bloody expensive. How in the world does Google give every single user 6 gigabytes of space? I don't know. They must be getting a heck of a deal, a deal that none of our schools could get, for sure. So, you need to be spending money on servers, but I think you also need to be looking at ways you can offload that into what is being called the cloud or cloud computing. And there's a great video that I didn't want to put into the talk at TED.com called 5,000 Days. The internet is only a little over 5,000 days old. Put that into perspective for you. 5,000 days. And the talk is about what are the next 5,000 days like? And this guy talks about that everything will be kept in the cloud, that everything will be kept in these huge server farms that are right now being built by Google, Microsoft. It's behind the scenes. Hardly anybody knows it's happening. But they're going and they're buying up cheap, cheap land in the middle of nowhere. There's one going in the middle of Washington State. And it's just this huge, it looks like just gigantic barn, and it's filled with servers. Just huge, just servers. And it's in the middle of nowhere. They need electricity and a fiber optic cable. And it's connected to the rest of the grid. Nobody needs to be out there. They can access it all remotely. They've even got them set up that if there's a natural disaster headed the way, the information will be sucked from that one out to the other ones as a backup, and then sucked back in after the storm's over. And they're giving you 6 gigabytes of storage. That's just, I think we need to be looking at how do we make things web-based, and so all of these devices just reach into the cloud and get the information we need. And that's what the video is about. It's called 5,000 Days. It's on TED.com if you want to watch it. It's a great, great video. But I mean, that's what this computer allows, right? It's wireless. I can reach. I've backed up all of my presentations in case my computer crashes is at a free hosting place that gives me 2 gigabytes of space called Dropbox.com. It shows up as a folder. It looks just like a folder on my desktop. I can show it to you. It's right up here at the top. Let me get somewhere. It's right this one, this blue one. Open my Dropbox. You're actually looking at a folder on the internet. 2 gigabytes of space. So I've backed up. Here's my Aircos 08 folder. So if my computer crashes, I can grab somebody else's computer, grab it. It's all backed up in what they call the cloud. Somewhere, some server, somewhere out there in the world. Okay, I would look at doing that. Okay, here's a picture. If you want to know what they look like, this is nothing but servers when it gets done. This is one that Google is building in China. 20 some stories, nothing but servers. We need to find ways to cut costs to use this space that is becoming so cheap to them. And again, I don't know how they do it. We can't do it at international schools. I don't know obviously we're not buying it large enough bulk. But they're just giving this stuff away. And we need to be able to tap in and figure out how we're going to use this. How can we use this? And how do we make everything at our school web-based? Do away with having that folder on the network that kids back up to. Everything should go through the web. It's going to save you on antivirus. It's going to save you on, it doesn't matter if the kid brings in a PC, a Mac, or an iPhone. The web browser is the number one compatible program. A web browser works anywhere and does everything. You know, install Moodle, which is open source. Kids can upload, go to courses, go to class, all through the web. Okay? Give kids storage. Cloud computing. Thought that was a pretty picture. Okay? So our schools, we've got to connect them because they're connecting on their own. And how do we get them to connect within the school? So let's talk a little bit about, and this comes out of the chapter I'm writing in the book, of what does this look like now for you into the future? And in the chapter, my premise is that we need to split this. And I believe it should be split at about 300 kids. If you're in a school that's over 300 kids, you need to have a separate IT side and what I call an educational support side, or ET side. This is educational technology. This is your infrastructure support, right? Supports the hardware, focus on hardware and software, purchases, fixes hardware solutions, blah, 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 blah. These, we almost everybody has one of these. This is the side that's missing. This is the side that allows those teachers not to go anywhere. If you are not supporting the teachers in the classroom, it's not going to happen. I think it's at about 300 kids that you need to have one of these. Okay? Communication between these two. This person, I truly believe, should be kind of the overall leader, because every decision we make should be focused on education, not on what the hardware we have. Okay? Just to give you an example, at ISBU, there's three of us. I focus elementary. Chad Bates does middle school. Dennis Harder does high school. So we're talking 1,700 kids. So we're a little over my 300 limit, but, you know, that's where we're at right now. And actually, in the elementary, we've got 700 kids, and there's Kim Confino, so we're actually doing okay. There's actually two of us in the elementary.
Do you have the other side of
kids? I don't. We have one person that just does this. We have one IT director, Stephen Lehman, and then he has 12 local ties that are his support. And what we do is we come to him and we're like, okay, Stephen, here's what we need to do. These are the systems we need to have in place. We have a conversation about it, and then we make a decision on how that moves forward based on what's happening in the classroom and how to support learning in the classroom to the best of our ability. Okay? This might be a position you want to add. Okay. All right. What this overlap looks like, and don't worry about reading this. It's on the wiki. You can download this whole PDF that walks you through all of this. But basically, looking at a restructuring of systems, here's your IT support person, here's your educational support person, here's your library media specialist. They play a new role. Because a lot of these same things that a librarian or library media specialist has been doing haven't changed. They're still teaching research skills. They're just teaching new research skills. Go get yourself a 21st century librarian, and they will help to support this whole circle. And what this circle just represents is the overlapping and how these three kind of really focus in to start getting to this. Because at the end of the day, you need to be spending a lot of your money right here on professional development. And what we understand from years and years of research is that professional development, the way that we usually do it, does not work. Conferences like this, and I'm sorry, don't work. You come, I get you all riled up, you go back Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, right? Everything that you missed hits you, done, off and running. We're talking about long-term, focused, bring in somebody that can help your school create a plan, move you forward over a long period of time. Okay? That day in, day out, we are talking technology. That at every faculty meeting, we take 10 or 15 minutes, we're talking about the changes, the pedagogical changes that this allows to happen in the classroom. And it's only until we get teachers on the pedagogical level that we even have to worry about the tools. Because if you can give every teacher a laptop, and a lot of schools have given every teacher a laptop, but okay? This is the Learning 2.08 conference that I helped to put on. Again, this was really cool. I just love this shot. I show this because international schools are giving laptops to teachers. Most, how many are out there that every teacher has a laptop? Yeah, it's good to know. I'm going to ask before we leave. I want to know how many schools, just to get you thinking, one-to-one programs, one computer for every child, high school and middle schools where I would like to focus. How many of you are doing it? How many of you are going to be going there? And then how many are saying, I'm not going there? Our school has made a conscious decision not to go there. I'm just interested. I'll be asking that before we leave. Okay? This is what I think the support should look like. Focused on what do students need to know. We need to have infrastructure in place. We need to have support in place. There needs to be a conclusion, and we need to have implementation with supporting the whole thing. We turn this around to what this looks like in your school. We change student-centered to your student information system, PowerSchool, Admin Plus, something in the middle that we can pull information from. From there, we create a school portal, a teacher website, student network, and course management system. Now, what this means, I think this means, is before you go one-to-one, if you're thinking to go one-to-one, you need to have a place for your kids to go. If you're going to go one-to-one and your school has not created a portal for them to learn out of, then you've put the cart before the horse. You've got to build that portal. When kids have a computer, where do you want them to go? And it better not be Google.com, because we all know we're there, right? Because the next thing we know, there's going to be 9 billion searches every month. What's your school going to build that is going to educationally impact them when they turn on their computer? Okay? Here's what we're building at ISB. We use PowerSchool in the middle. Out of PowerSchool, that drops into a server every night. The usernames and passwords are sucked out of PowerSchool into Moodle, open source course management software, the same course management software used by Stanford, Yale, MIT, and name a gazillion other ones. It's free, open source. So this is our we call it the walled garden. Only our kids get in there. It's a good place to use it for handouts. You can have discussions. There's a chat feature. I've got fourth graders that are using the chat feature. They get home at night and they get to chat with each other. But it's inside this walled garden where they can only chat with their other classmates. Very safe, but we're teaching them the skill of chat. Educational institutions are one of the only institutions left that don't use an internal chat client. We still rely on that old thing called email. I work for the wiki company wetpaint.com, and I went there this summer, and they have an internal chat client running all the time in the background. And anybody can get in and say, you know, hey, Kurt, I need help on this, da-da-da-da-da-da. And Kurt says, okay, let me look at it, da-da-da-da-da. And they have this quick chat. And it's not these a million little emails back and forth. Can we meet at 2 o'clock? No, I'm busy at 2 o'clock. Can you meet at 2:30? Okay, let's meet at 2:30. Is that today or tomorrow? Is it my room or your room? How many of your emails during the day are these, right? It's a conversation. Why don't we use a conversation tool for a conversation? Email was never made to be a conversation tool, but we've adapted it that way. So I'm talking to schools and say, is there some way we can have an internal chat client where I can just get on and say, hey, Kurt, can you meet today at tool? And Kurt might not be on right at that time, but he gets back to his computer and he looks over and he can see that, oh, Jeff wanted to know, and he can type back to me and I can look back at him. And it's just kind of like this quick little chat, da-da-da-da-da-da, done. Okay? It doesn't need to be a doink in my email inbox. You know, teachers are always talking about they're overwhelmed by emails. Well, heck yeah, I'm teachers. Do you know how many of those I get during the day? Jeez Louise. Can you come in at 12:30? No, I'm busy at 12:30. Well, how about 1:30? Well, what about tomorrow? Well, you're going to be gone. Well, just walk down to the person's room. Okay, here's my calendar. Let's do it. And a lot of times I do. The technology is not working. We don't have it in place. WordPress MU, free, basically blogging software, but we're using it for standard websites. Again, free. It sucks the username password out, creates it, used by teachers to publish classes. So we're using this as our teacher website. So for teacher communication to the outside world. Okay? Open, teachers write their daily notes, whatever they want. Parent communication, that's what we're using it for. In Shanghai American School, they also use this for students. The wiki, if you know a wiki program, anybody can, like Wikipedia, anybody can add or delete information. You can set them up in different ways. We're using an Apple server for that. Apple has a great one. If you're an Apple school, you have it on your server. You just have to turn it on. Okay, it comes free with Apple. And then ELG, this is Facebook for students. Okay, so let me show you kind of what this looks like, if I can, and I'll try to stay out of the way. So our kids, when our kids get on their laptops, they go to panthernet.isb.ac.th, or they can go to my.isb.ac.th. So those are the two for kids. This will load Moodle. It'll ask for a username password, and the kid gets sucked in. As soon as the kid is in, they're given a list of every course they're enrolled in. Again, pulled straight out from PowerSchool, automatically enrolled in every course. They just click. They say, oh, I need to go check science. Click on science. It opens up. Okay. Now, we are hosting this at the school on our servers, which means at school, this sucker just smokes. And it's web-based, so I don't care if the kid has an iPhone. He can go to class on his iPhone. The iPhone has a nice little Safari on it, or his iTouch, or whatever other cell phone you want to use. Or no, the internet's not working in here, so sorry. And then this one, we've just launched. We haven't even launched this one with kids. This is called MyISB. It's ELG. Hopefully that'll load for you. I hope, because it's kind of cool. Basically, what we've done is we're trying to take that collaborative, communicative nature of kids that is Facebook and try to use that in a school setting. So what we're going, oh, that's not good. So I hate the internet. It's my enemy, bandwidth. There it is, bandwidth. Somebody talk to this hotel. We need more of it. Anyways, what kids can do in here is they can create groups. Again, it'll suck their username password out. Just like in Facebook, you can go and create a group, people join the group. We're using this for, say, the rugby team. The rugby team creates a group. They can upload files. They can chat to each other. There's a message board. There's an internal, just like in Facebook, there's an internal email system. As soon as you join the group, you get an email if somebody's updated the calendar, if somebody's created a new page, if somebody's uploaded a picture for the rugby group. Then let's say after school choir wants one. And let's say that after, so this is that whole group community that these kids thrive on. We've set one up and said, here you go, kids. This is for you. Now, the program we're using is called ELG, ELGG.org. Free, open source, put it on your server. Have this guy, I'll give you this address now. I love this guy, David Tones, his name. This is the guy that does all of our, this is the guy that in about 3 days grabs the data out of PowerSchool, very reasonably priced. Based out of Thailand, he can access your server from anywhere in the world, as long as you have the bandwidth. Here's his website. I tried to get a bunch of cards from him before I came, but I didn't get to see him. Very reasonably priced, does great work, supports his work. He's got quite the interesting, he does this, he started doing this as just a hobby, making these things for schools. He used to work for the CIA, programming missile launch trajectories. And now he's bored, so he works on school stuff. And we got him started with Moodle. ISB got him started with Moodle. And he loved Moodle so much that he's actually now one of the main developers on the open source website that's based out of Australia. But so he knows that program. And again, open source, free, costs you a couple $100. He'll set it up for you, have everything ready to go, pull the information out of PowerSchool or out of whatever you're using, and have you good to go. Great guy. I highly recommend him. Okay.
Have you looked at having Google run your mail for you?
Yes. At Shanghai American School, that's what they use. Yep.
So
and
they use the Shanghai American School domain, but it runs off Google.
That's right. So kids go to sasstudent.org, and sasstudent.org pops up with Google, only it's called EagleNet. You can name it whatever you want. The kids sign in, and I would be jeff@sasstudent.org, and it's Gmail running. The kids have access to Google Docs. Our IB students, I went in last year, we were just piloting last year with 11th graders. I went in last year with the 11th graders and said, hey, would this be something interesting to you if I could write something and you could edit it and we could share it among the class just through your email address, which is school related now, these kids have it. Would this be something interesting to you? And the kids were like, well, I don't know. Well, this year they're seniors and they're writing their final IB reports and they're constantly cross editing each other's work. The teachers are on it. The teachers are in writing notes. When the kid gets done, file, save as Word. Done. All done. Kept in the cloud, off the servers. Google's responsibility. Google backs it up. What does Google get out of it? Why are so many of these things giving away free? Because Google has just built a user that when they leave your school, they're going to go and they're going to get their own Gmail account that has ads on it. There's no ads for schools, but what they're doing is they're building users. The same reason why Microsoft now gives away XP for $3 a copy. Because if I can get you hooked on XP, when you leave school, guess what operating system you know? Right? Here's the problem we've had with technology in the past. This comes from Doug Johnson. I've asked to use his, and we've had quite a few conversations. He was here last year at the admins conference. But he called it Manateca, which is the school he worked at, hierarchies of needs. So empower the students, enhance teaching, extensive research, effective administration, and established infrastructure. Here's the problem with this model. This model is built in a pyramid, meaning that we spend a lot of money down here for very little output up here. And the problem that schools run into is that we build this and it takes us 3 to 5 years, right? It's our 3 to 5 year plan. By the time we get done building it, guess what happens? And we never move up a level because we're too busy building this. Because it's in the shape of a pyramid. So what I think we need to do is make it a square that exactly affects our administration, that extends to the resources that we can support at our school based on our school finances, that enhance our teaching, that affects student learning. What if then you split that over 3 years? Because we can't. I wish we could all pay for it in 1 year. As a technology person, I ask you every day to pay for it all in 1 year, and I know we can't, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to keep pushing. right? But what if we can start with student empowerment? What do we want students to do? What are the resources we need? And we're going to build the infrastructure to support that today, knowing in 3 years' time, it's going to switch anyway. We build for today with an eye on tomorrow. Okay? That's what I call that. Here are your questions. What do we want students to learn? Once you have that, then you can move to, what do teachers need to know? That's your professional development. What resources are needed? What software do we need? Do we need one-to-one computers? Where are we at in this? How do we make this happen? That's the administrator's job, right? And we need enough infrastructure to support the whole thing. We're not going to build this mammoth unless you have the money, like SCIS did when you're building into school. That's different. But for most of us, how do I build today to get the best bang for my buck today, knowing that in 3 years' time, it's going to have to be replaced? You should always have a three-year technology plan, period. It's changing too fast to say, we've got a three-year technology plan, and when you get done to the 3 years, to then think about the next 3 years. You should be working on this year, thinking 3 years out. Then work on the next year, and you add a year to the end. Work on the next year, add a year to the end. Where is it that we're aiming? Because every year that you're establishing this infrastructure, you need to think, okay, we're here, but in 3 years' time, we want to be there. So maybe instead of running Cat5 cable, we're going to use fiber optic, knowing in 3 years we're going to be right there. Okay? But understand what you want your kids to do next year and build for that. Okay? I think we'll see a much more greater output on student learning than we have in the past. I've been to a lot of schools who say, wow, look at my infrastructure. And that's all great and dandy, but you don't even have an LCD projector in the room so a teacher can present anything. You know? Yeah, but you've got tons of server space. Yes, you do. Okay? That's it. I'll shut up. Any questions, concerns, comments? The one thing before we go, how many, raise your hand, one from each school, please, are doing one-to-one program right now, have one-to-one programs in place? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. How many are going there? Within the next 2 to 3 years, you will be one-to-one. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. How many are not going there? You've made a conscious decision that you're not going to be one-to-one. This is kind of my prediction for international schools, that by 2012, you can shake your head yes or no, by 2012 there's going to be a clear divide between those schools that are one-to-one and those schools that aren't one-to-one. Because I know every school that I've talked to is right here. Either they've just gone there within... My prediction is by 2012 you'll be able to draw a line in the sand. And what does that mean for our kids? And here's the problem I have. What does that mean for our kids who we know we all trade day in and day out, and they come through all of our schools, and I go to your school and you're one-to-one, and all of a sudden that kid's engaged and that kid's doing everything, and then they come to my school and they're using paper and pencil. Or they come from my school and they're using paper and pencil, and they go to your school and they're completely overwhelmed because all of a sudden they're handed a laptop. So then I think of what's your parent decision, right? If I'm a parent and I've got school A or school B in the same city and my kid's coming from a one-to-one program, what school am I going to pick at the other end? Or on the opposite, if your kid's not in a one-to-one school, maybe you stay not the one. Maybe that's the niche your school's going to be. I don't know. But I'm glad to see this because this was kind of what I was thinking. And I would think if there's anybody down here, whew, I worry about those schools. Yes, question.
Can we ask how many schools one-to-one are at work? And also how many are going there if they're going?
Good question. How many schools are Apple that are doing it? One. You're 50-50. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So 6 Apple and 6 that are PC. Any tablets? 1, 2. So 2 tablets. So that's four. Don't laugh. Four PC, two tablets. I can do math a little bit. Okay? Going there, how many people going there are going to be Apple schools? One, two, three. Okay, so three apples. Anybody tablets going there, thinking of going tablets? Everybody else is PC. So what is that, 11? 11 PC schools. That's an interesting breakdown. What do I think? I think it's a personal decision on your school. I think you have to decide what is it you want kids to learn. I think this should drive whether or not you're PC or Mac, or PC or Mac on the other end. Do you want your kids to easily create videos? The Mac does it way better than anything else. Are you only interested in audio? You can get a free program on the PC that makes it dead simple. It's actually the free program I loaded here because I hate GarageBand. You know, I think if you're thinking about doing that, you need to start with what is this and choose the right tool for the job. You know, don't come to me and say, I'm going Apple, what do you think? My first question to you is, well, what do you want kids to do? What do you want kids to do? You tell me what you want kids to do, then I'll tell you what the right tool for the job is. But you've got to make that decision first. And it should be in your vision statement. It should be in your mission statement. What is it you want kids to do? Yes?
Can we ask them on the table, what is the IT investment of total cost per school? Just for curiosity.
Depends on the size of your school.
One-on-one.
Ones that are one-to-one? Well, and I think it depends on, I think it's going to be depend where you diversify your kind of laptops as a lease program and just passing the cost on to teachers. I think that's really hard in international schools because we are all different and we're all taking a different approach to how we're funding it. I don't think that would be an accurate, and I don't know what the right, I don't think there is a right solution. I think it's a very individual solution for individual schools. And only you at your school can make that decision what's best.
How early you go
one-to-one?
Which grade?
I would go... Don't. You're all going to write this down, and then if it fails, you're all going to come back and say Jeff did it. Jeff, you told me these were the grades to do. I like 6, 8, 9. I like sixth graders because they're creative and they're willing to take a risk, and because you're building that capacity through the rest of your middle school. Your eighth graders are going to become ninth graders, your ninth graders become 10th graders, and you can start a high school program if you just want to. It depends. Can you just do it all in 1 year? Do it all in 1 year. You know? Do you have to take it over 3 years? Take it over 3 years and give them ninth graders new laptops every year. And you'll just build that capacity in. Or 9th and 11th. Poor seniors. I love seniors, but poor seniors. Yes?
So just one comment on the one-to-one, and we're in our implementation of it. And one of the things that we found that has been very important for us is that the teachers for the grade levels have received their laptops a year ahead of their kids and spent an entire year preparing for the students when they get their MacBooks and bring them into the classroom. And they're doing a lot of that grade, so we're not trying to support a whole school in one single implementation. And we found that, I think that's actually saved us from a tremendous amount of grief. And teachers are reporting now that in their classroom they're actually seeing some very positive results. They're ready, they're more comfortable, and they're using the technology, and their kids are right on task right from the get-go. So
I agree. I think once you decide to implement, I think it's a three-year process. I think the first year you make sure your wireless and your infrastructure can handle it. You have your portal built, right? You have your Moodle set up. You have whatever the system you're going to have set up so that when you do get there, kids have a place to go. I think that's one. Two, you give the teachers that are going to be first on board, you give them a laptop with the understanding you are a sixth grade teacher. You are getting a laptop, and next year you're going to have 18 of these looking back at you. figure out how to use it. We're going to support you. We're going to give you the PD. But you need to know that next year, there's no choice. Your choice is move a grade level, get out. Otherwise, next year, the laptop's coming. And then the third year, put it in the hands of the kids. That's the model that I like, that I've seen work. Correct, yep.
Our school is going Apple, mm-hmm. three-year rollout. This is the first year. How effective is the ADE program, and what other type of PD will be, what do the teachers need to know?
Okay, all right. Apple has done more work with education and laptops and computers than any other company. They were the founders, they were the first, if you remember, original Oregon Trail, right, with the big 5.5-inch floppies and the little green guy. Have you seen Oregon Trail today? I can't even get started. I can't even get out of town. There's so many options, and you have to just give me the bullets. I want to go shoot. That's what we did as boys, right? Bought all the bullets. I like ADE for the actual technical learning the tool part. There's no Apple reps in here, is there? Okay. It's a huge sell on Apple's part. It is the Apple fan club, right? They are looking for diehard Apple people, and they're going to get down and dirty with the tools. That is good if you're going Apple and you want people to get with the tools. What it doesn't do is give the reasoning, the whole first part of the presentation, of why we need to go there. And understanding, helping teachers, supporting teachers to make that pedagogical shift of what it is that the skills are different, that the way kids interact with information is different, therefore you need to teach differently, Apple doesn't hit. That's where your support at your school needs to start. Too often, we start with the tool. You know, we start with Google Earth. Wow, look at this, look what I can do with Google Earth. But that little project I showed you started 2 weeks ago with what do we want students to learn? Okay, we have to teach exploration. What's our essential question? Our essential question is, why do humans explore? We're going to start by having the kids explore their own exploration of the world as international students. We are then moving to going to Google, and we're going to have the kids search and see, has anybody made the route that Magellan took? We already know nobody's made it. Guess what our kids are going to do? They're going to make and plot the exact route that Magellan took. We're going to upload that to the Google community, Google Earth community, where every other fifth grader around the world is going to be able to download our fifth graders' work and see exactly the route Magellan took. We're creating the information and sharing it with the world. But it's not about Google Earth. It's about understanding what Google Earth can do to support this new learning concept and being able to share that knowledge with the world. That's where I think we need to start with professional development. Because otherwise it's just a tool and the teacher doesn't understand what to do with it. Show me how it affects my classroom. Show me how I can use what I'm doing today, enhance the learning that's happening. You know, show me that we don't even know the jobs kids are going to have. This is the thing I love about kids. I go into kids, of course, international schools. Every kid wants to be a doctor or an engineer. Right? All our kids are that smart. They're going to be doctors and engineers. And I go to the kids that are engineers and say, well, okay, you want to be an engineer. What are you going to be an engineer in? Well, I don't know. Just an engineer. Heck, I went to Google's website. There are 25 engineer jobs open at Google. Not one of them says just engineer. You're a software engineer. You're a website engineer. You're a hardware engineer. You're a web database engineer. There is so many little things anymore. What is the little niche? What is your job? There's no such thing as being a doctor. You're a brain surgeon. You're a foot doctor. You're a hand doctor. You're a toenail doctor. I don't know. Everything's broken down into these niche markets now. How do we get kids to understand that and focus on that?
I think I may know what you answered, but I think you talked going back to the database and using PowerSchool. Do you have any comments regarding PowerSchool study with StyleMaker?
Yeah, I have not worked with all of them. I've not worked with StudyWiz, to be completely honest. I like PowerSchool because it allows you to pull the data out. FileMaker Pro does the same thing. The problem is FileMaker Pro is not in an open standard format. And no matter what program you decide, I think that's one of your first questions. Is your database in an open standard format? PowerSchools is, which allows you to take that data and I can move it now to any other open standard. Moodle uses an open standard because it's open source. Elg uses an open standard because it's open source. So we're able to pull that information out. The reason why in Shanghai American School, one of the reasons why Shanghai American School moved from Admin Plus to PowerSchool was for that exact reason. Admin Plus uses a internal database program that you can't pull the data out very easily. You can. They claim that you can. And I've tried to watch it, and I still don't get the data that I need to create the programs I need. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they say you can do it, and you probably can. I've just never... It's weird. It's not as smooth as somebody that says, look, we have our database that is just like the standard open format that everybody else uses, which makes it really easy. And if you ever do decide to change, if some other thing comes along that's better, it's going to be a lot easier to port your information if you're using a standard format. FileMaker Pro is its own format. Access is its own format. That's why I like PowerSchool. But that's me. That's what I also know. Okay? But that's what we found in our research at Shanghai American School, was that was one of the ones that had an open standard, and they're very upfront about it. David, who does all of our programming, again, we hired this guy, David. This guy, yeah, well, this guy here, we hire him. He's based out of Thailand. You don't even have to fly him in, right? Use the connection. Just give him access to your servers. Your IT guy can give him access to your servers. He'll get in, just do all the coding for you. Boop, 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 done. Okay? He's a great guy. Good, very affordable. Any other questions, comments? Yes.
Bandwidth.
One day, the local Chinese service provider apparently just opened it up, and we saw a big spike in bandwidth. Okay, it's basically a whole bunch of kids downloading movies.
Of course.
How do you? I mean, you still have a limit of how much bandwidth you can have.
Mm-hmm.
How do you control that?
There is a piece of hardware that you can buy, not overly expensive, but again, it will cost you money, called a packet shaper. And what a packet shaper does, your IT guy will know more about it than you can, but a packet shaper basically gives X amount of bandwidth to specific programs. So example at our school, where teachers love to be on Skype. I use Skype all day to Skype with people around the world if I have questions about different things. We've limited Skype to only have this much bandwidth, which means if you're the first 10 people on, you get more than everybody else, but as soon as they're not using it, then it's open back up to everybody else. But Skype never uses more than this much. YouTube only gets to use this much. So if you're downloading a YouTube, you're guaranteed to have 500K. So it's called a packet shaper, and it's very standard used at the ISP level too. A lot of your ISPs are probably shaping your traffic. Yeah. We found that out and got into a big mean fight with our ISP the other day. Because all of a sudden we're like, why is this website so slow? And we're like, we're not doing anything with it. And we go to the ISP and they're like, oh, yeah, well, we'll shut that off now. Like, yeah, you will. We need that website. Okay. Anything else? I'm here all week. Feel free to talk to me. I'll try to do my best I can to answer your questions. And thank you.
Thank you, John.
We take it.